The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I don't think I'm going to do it anymore. I bought that shampoo. It says, promises you extra body. So I've been using it for a couple of weeks now. It works. It works. Gained 7 pounds. Good to have you with me, Dr. Ray. Hey, you guys aren't paying for this. Don't say, it's not very funny. Well, you didn't pay for it. I save my good stuff for the groups that pay. Delighted to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In program. It's a call-in program. You can call in. And you will run into a very, very pleasant, delightful, mannerly, all three synonyms don't always apply to me, call screamer Eric Dumont. He will say things like, the doctor is in, what is your question, please? Now, he's a little narrow on that, because we take more than just questions here. We'll take your comments. We'll take your disagreements with me. We'll take your helps for other people. But the bulk of what we get, indeed, I have to defer to Eric, are questions about life, situations, circumstances, faith, people. Obviously, we can't do therapy or diagnose here, but we can educate, give a little help. Help you think a little bit about how to, well, if not better solve the situation, learn to live with it. That's so much of what peace is in life. Learning to live with what is. I don't know why so many folks now just want to change things and change people. Sometimes you can do that, and sometimes you can't. And the earlier you recognize when you can't, and you accept it, the more peace will be in your life. So, the number, 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. Be delighted to hear from you. I know many of you have called in the past, and you were left hanging. Ooh, is that a violent? That's a violent word. I probably should expunge that word from my vocabulary. Left on the line, neglected at the end of the program. If you were, you call back, you're first up. Now, there could be a battle between those of you who are first up from past programs and those of you who disagree with me. I want you to know if you disagree with me, I have to make a case to defend myself. By the way, I did get an email. All right, I'm digressing here for a moment before I go into the monologue. Let me give you the number one more time. 877-57-EQUAL. I got a couple of very nice listeners who said, one said, I agree with you almost 100% of the time. Well, what if you don't agree with me? And then, of course, that's when they write. And she didn't agree with me. And she did not like the fact that I was cautious about supplements and about claims or non-medical, pharmaceutical-type natural interventions. Cautious. And I was told, of course, that some high-profile places have looked at this and done research on this. But keeping in mind, they haven't done research on everything, and keeping in mind that sometimes, and this is an interesting little stat you want to put in your hat and smoke it to mix my metaphors, about 50% of medically based research is not replicated. You know what that means? It means when they run the study again with different groups, they don't get the original results, which means the original results are highly questionable. So, On one hand, I will acknowledge that there is more of a movement towards looking at some of these natural remedies and their claims. And if it can be honestly and straightforward ascertained that these are helpful, terrific. But caution is the name of the game. All right, I answered that. That's enough. I know you meant it. You said it. I know you meant it. I'm sorry. I was just angry. I was just angry. I don't mean that. Then why did you say it? I was not thinking clear, and it just came out. Okay, fine. Now, there is a misconception that when someone says something to you that is negative in some way, criticism, a put down, a personal attack, if they're angry when they said it, that means their governor was off and they're telling you what they really think. But they won't tell you that when they're not angry because they have enough self-control to keep their mouth shut. And so you think when they're angry, it came out. What they thought, what they actually have been thinking about you and your life and your ways is now out in the open. That's wrong. Oh, come on, Dr. Ray. People do say things when they're angry that's how they really feel, and finally they came out and said it. Yes, that can happen. But that is not always the case. When people are angry, they say things that they really don't think, but they're just upset, and maybe they're striking out to score some points. I think we as Christians behoove ourselves? I don't know. I don't think that's the right word. But that's okay. They're not going to take me off the air for that. It behooves us to give them the benefit of the doubt if they say, I didn't mean that. Our temptation is to think, yes, you did. You said it. I know how you think. It finally came out. That's our temptation. It's a parallel to I'm sorry. When somebody says I'm sorry and you doubt that they're sorry, you don't accept they're sorry. You impugn motives, false motives. He's not sorry, just saying it. Get out of trouble. Besides, if he were truly sorry, well, then he wouldn't do it, right? That's a topic for a future monologue. When someone says, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I was just mad. I was just hurt. I was just striking back. I was just lashing out. Accept it.
Oh, but Dr. Ray, I don't believe it.
Well, you don't have to believe it to accept it, do you? One of the things sometimes we're asked to do, and this gives me great struggle as a psychologist, I even confess this in confession. As a psychologist, I just am prone to analyze. I'm prone to assess. There's just no way around it. It's second nature to me, even in interactions. And in doing that, one of the aspects is to try to figure out motives. Now, motives are really difficult to figure out. They're hidden by their very nature. They're complex by their very nature. So if I try to analyze someone and I think that I'm being accurate, yet my Christianity tells me give them the benefit of the doubt. Now, see, that's a contradiction here. How do I do that? How do I strive for accuracy, try to make the best interpretation, but yet at the same time recognize that maybe my interpretation might not be correct, and even though they didn't mean it, I assess it, and I think they did. Well, giving them the benefit of the doubt means accepting what they say. So they said they didn't mean it. Okay. Those of you in marriages, when you have spouses who say things to you and later on apologize and say they didn't mean it, if you cling to that, if you cling to the idea that, yes, you did mean it, I know you meant it, they're done. You've shut them down. You've essentially said, I don't care what you say. I don't care how you apologize. I don't care how you explain it. I don't accept it. Now, once you do that to somebody, there is nothing they can do to correct it. Have you not said things that you regret when you were angry or hurt or lashing out or arguing or hot-tempered? You know you have. I have. Once, 1991, I think it was, in a basketball game. I said, you can't shoot from there. You stink. Awful. Just awful. So given that, did you mean everything that you said when you were that angry? And if you told someone you didn't mean it, would you like to have them accept that? Rather than look at you and say, well, now I know what you really think. Came out now, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Be careful. It is not always true that people say what they mean, what they think, but they won't say when they're calm, but they say it when they're angry, and that's how they really think. Not necessarily. That might be how they think for the moment when they're that upset. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call. I would love to hear from you if you have something angry to say. If you mean it, I'm Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The Catechism of the Catholic Church on Animals, paragraph 2417. God entrusted animals to the stewardship of those whom he created in his own image. It is legitimate to use animals for food and clothing. They may be domesticated to help man in his work. Medical and scientific experimentation on animals is a morally acceptable practice if it remains within reasonable limits and contributes to caring for or saving human lives. It is contrary to human dignity to cause animals to suffer or die needlessly. It is likewise unworthy to spend money on them that should, as a priority, go to the relief of human misery. So the Catechism is quite clear. We have a great duty to exhibit kindness to animals, and at the same time, understand that animals were created not for their own sake, but for the sake of the human.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
My little granddaughter, Lillian, she's five. She asked me, Grandpa, can you, for my birthday, get me a Cinderella party? I said, Lily, what's a Cinderella party? She says, no, it's kind of like you have what you're doing when you're Cinderella. I said, okay. So I invited all of her friends over to my house, and I had them clean my house. I liked these Cinderella parties. Ted from Wisconsin has some questions about the church's clerical levels. Hi, Ted, how are you?
Hello, doctor.
I appreciate the call. Thanks.
I just have a quick question. I don't know if you can hear me or not because my phone is kind of like goofy. It like sometimes wants to go to phone, and sometimes it wants to go to the speaker system.
Well, I would rather have your phone be goofy than you, Ted.
Of the pastoral units. There's deacons, there's priests, there's pastors who actually have a group of priests together. Then there's also the monsignors. Then there's the other cardinals, archcardinal, bishops, all the way up to the ones that vote for the Pope, and then the Pope. Could you answer that, please?
Well, that's pretty broad. Let me give you some. I can't say that. Yeah, you're right. By the way, is this true? I'll say it later. I don't want to get off the topic. For the Catholic Church, the bishops are considered the successors, a long line of laying on of hands, all the way back to the original apostles. So the bishops could be called the successors of the apostles. The bishops are the shepherds and, to some degree, the administrators of dioceses. Did we lose Ted? Did he go? He's gone? Okay. All right. Priests are able to offer sacrifice. They are able to do priestly duties like baptize, hear confessions, confect the Eucharist, the bread and the wine, into the actual body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. So the priests are, from a clerical level, just below the bishops. The deacons, and this again comes from the very early church, when the apostles said, hey, you know, we got to spend more time preaching the word, and we're getting caught up in doing all kinds of services, which is good, but we need to devote our time more to preaching and evangelizing. The deacons were trustworthy people that were helpers, helping them. Now, the deacons in the modern church are able to do things like baptisms. They can't hear confessions, but they can preach. So bishops, priests, deacons, all can preach, all can baptize, but only the bishops and the priests can hear confessions or confect the Eucharist. Now, there's a whole lot more I could do on that, Ted. This, the best summary, I guess, I could give you is that in the history of the Catholic Church, going back to Jesus Christ, and you can't argue with history. That is the history. Now, you can argue and say, well, that's the history, but the Catholic Church really blew it way back then and messed up Christianity, which is the argument of many non-Catholic Christian denominations. However, if you simply look at the way the structure was coming about in time, early on in the church, there were bishops, there were priests, there were deacons. A monsignor is a title of honor. Still a priest. It just means it has been conferred to the priest by the bishop, who is saying in so many ways your service to the church has been exemplary. It has been longstanding. And we confer this title of honor onto you. All right. I want to stop there. I could go on this for a while. Okay. Now, if I go to Andrew, I am automatically, flat out automatically, inviting email e-persons that will say to me, Dr. Ray, normally I agree with you, but you're way off on this one. Okay. But anyway, I want to answer this as best I can. Andrew from Port Huron, Michigan, is upset. I think rightfully so. Although that's where I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, because there are places more and more that are requiring this vaccine so that you can, in fact, conduct normal, everyday type freedoms. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Good, Dr. Ray. How are you?
Okie dokie. The debate on this, the question becomes, and I think this is a fair debate, the question becomes, is this virus now, when the numbers are way below what they were at their peak, so dangerous, so devastating, so threatening, that we have to have a one-size-fits-all everybody, that we do not look at a person's medical history. There are people who their doctor would tell them, no, you better not do this. You better not take this virus, given your history, given your situation. But see, that's not allowed anymore. More and more groups are simply Correct. Saying, take it. You have to. Shut up and obey, which is frightening to a lot of people. I can understand that.
Right. Like the city of New York coming up with that, where, you know, even to basically walk down the street, that's an exaggeration, but you got to have this vaccine card. You know, vaccine passport. And I don't live there, fortunately, but they got a writing kind of on the wall, like with universities and hospitals, that to even come into the building, you need this vaccine.
I'm not sure this will, I'm not a constitutional expert. The constitutional experts don't agree. However, I'm not sure this will pass constitutional muster. The problem is it'll take it forever to get there. You will have various rulings on the various federal courts, and by the time it does get to the Supreme Court, it could be 2-3 years from now. Who knows? Okay, so what's happening?
The president, though, is forcing anybody who works in the government, you know, 3 million people needs to have the vaccine.
I have heard legal experts say that so far this vaccine is considered experimental. And because of that, legally, you can't force someone to take it. Now, the debate is, of course, well, this virus is so dangerous and it's so mutating and it's so catchy that we have to, for public health, we have to do this. Well, that's one viewpoint. Another viewpoint is it as dangerous as the media keeps pounding? For example, I just saw a statistic. Now, they're beating up Florida. They're saying Florida, with their freedom and their openness, they're just pounding Florida. You are awful, you're irresponsible, etc. 2 days ago, the COVID deaths in Florida, population 20 million, generally an older aged state. The COVID deaths, not counting the infection rate. That's what they tout in the media. It's always the infection rate. The COVID deaths, 22 million. You know how many there were? COVID deaths a couple days ago, Andrew?
5.
That's right. How'd you know that?
Was it?
That's right. That's exactly what it was. It was 5.
Well, you look at those numbers, and they do some kind of statistic based on a population of 1 million. Like, there's 30 per million people. And like you say, Florida is only at, like, rough numbers. I don't remember exact numbers. 80 per million. Where, like, Delaware, New York, Massachusetts are in 1,000. Like, 1,000 per billion. And so it's not as bad in Florida as, like, the media makes it out to be. But
part of the problem, too, is that some of this is media driven. I think there's no way around that. So that makes people skeptical. Now, when they were told 3 months ago by the CDC that, in fact, if you get a vaccine, you can live your life freely. 3 months later, they're saying, no, you can't. You have
when
to wear a mask.
Did the CDC get authority to make laws?
Well, that's the other problem. That is the constitutional debate. How did the CDC get the power to tell people, and they're using it under the emergency power basis, how did they get that power to say, this is what you are to do? That's the question.
Yeah, there are no branch of the government.
No, they're not. There's a much, much broader debate going on about how do we deal with this kind of thing and how much individual liberty do we surrender and on what basis, especially when the science is at best inconsistent, at best. So you're right. I can see people upset and angry. What I fear happening, Andrew, and I can see it coming down the pike. What I fear happening is, little by little, now I've already heard the CDC say this, if everybody wears masks, we can stop this in 2 weeks. Where have you heard that one before?
Right.
Call
and the masks
me,
don't work anyway.
Call me skeptical. I'm Dr. Ray. Go ahead, send the emails in.
What qualifies as a valid marriage in the eyes of the Catholic Church? The Catechism tells us there are certain requirements that must be present or the marriage is not a true sacrament. The requirements are as follows. The marriage must be between a baptized man and a baptized woman who are free to contract marriage and who freely express their consent. The Catechism defines freedom to contract as not being under constraint and not impeded by any natural or ecclesiastical law. The exchange of consent between the spouses is considered by the Church to be the most indispensable element of a valid marriage. According to the Catechism, the consent must be an act of the will of each party, free of coercion or grave external fear. If this freedom is lacking, the marriage is not valid. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of. If you're just tuning in and you're thinking, there's no way I can call now. Yes, you can. You can always call. And the reason you can always call is because calls are not selected necessarily on their timing. They're selected on the various ways that people bring something, a topic, to the table, whether we've heard it before, yesterday, or a variant thereof. Just a lot of reasons for the way calls are accepted, and we try to get to everybody, but many people, after about the half-hour mark, just don't call because they think, forget it, not gonna get in. Maria, Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Maria.
Hi.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome. I would like your thoughts on four possible schooling options for my 13-year-old son who was diagnosed with autism when he was four. And I can give you the four options, and then
okay.
I can tell you background or good or bad things right. about them. The first scenario is the public school that he is currently attending. The second option would be some kind of one-on-one learning, and we didn't do homeschooling, but we did school at home, so I did a lot of this with him last year when the schools were shut down. The third option would be a school specifically designed for students with autism, and the fourth option would be a vocational school. That would probably be in a few years, but my concern is that he's not learning anything in his current situation. So I wondered if any of the other ones would be better. But again, when I worked with him one-on-one this past year, he didn't seem to learn anything that way either.
Well, that's probably because he didn't cooperate.
We had lots of punishment, and by the end, he was a lot better. I've read a lot of your books. I'm pretty good with discipline, and
You know you could teach him at home because you have the leverage
right.
to teach him at home.
And all I right. did, yes.
All right.
But I just, like, for example, we did the same math problem basically all year, and I'm not convinced if I put it in front of him now that he could actually solve it.
Well, that doesn't mean that that was a flaw in your teaching. That may mean that that's a problem in his developmental level.
Okay.
Which leads me
to... Yeah, do you
to...
have thoughts like, along that, I
yeah.
guess, then? Because that's what I am just wondering, if it's a waste to have him in a school system, period, if he can't learn. And so then what would I do. And that's why I thought of these four scenarios. Obviously, he can write and he can read, but he's below his level. And it doesn't seem like at school they give him the answer keys and they exempt him from a lot of assignments. So I don't see much learning going on there. And everyone's positive and he likes that. So I'm just wondering, yes, if it's a waste for him to even be in a school environment.
To answer your question, I would have to know an awful lot about your son's development, his intellectual abilities, his attention abilities, his language abilities, his persevering abilities, all of that. Now,
okay.
Since I don't know any of that,
right,
I'm going to give you some general suggestions.
Good. Thank you. Yes.
If you're looking at learning, by and large, nothing beats one-on-one. All right? It's that simple.
Okay.
One-on-one. Whether it's you, whether it's a tutor, whether he is on an online class and then you give him some support, however you choose to do that. If your son at age 13 is easily influenced, you're getting into the peer group, and he likes to absorb what the peer group says and does, and I'm going to assume he is in specially assisted classes, is he not?
He's actually in all general classes, and he does have a paraprofessional, and he, so he doesn't have much peer influence, but yeah, he is not in the special classes just for him. He is in all general classes with support.
Okay. One thing that is going to happen is, and there's no way around it, is because he's in school, there's going to be peer influence. And those peers are clearly going to somewhat influence him and pull him along in what is the popular way to think among peers. And if you assess your son and you say he's easily influenced, I mean, he wants to fit in, he wants to belong, and he'll do what he has to do that, then to me that would be a main factor in deciding whether or not to send him to a public or even a private setting. If you said he initially didn't cooperate at home because it was baby school, you know, this isn't real school, this is mom school, okay?
Right.
So given that, if you said, no, I got him to cooperate afterwards because I realized I control everything and I can set
right.
up the structure and he will cooperate,
yeah.
then you've got 80% of the battle done. You will protect your son's innocence, in my opinion. You will keep him from getting programs that the public schools have decided now have to be placed in your child's mind.
That's
very true. There are many more and more public schools, and sadly even some private religious schools, are shaping kids to think a certain way, and that way may not at all be the way their parents are trying to raise them. And most parents are oblivious to it. They don't realize it. They don't pay attention to it. They just think the public schools have their kids' academic goals in the main. So if you're asking me, without knowing your son, without knowing you, then in fact, I lean toward any kind of homeschooling education through computer support, or if you have a co-op in your area, or you can bring in some tutors, however you wish to do that. I think your son will learn better. I think that there's a real good possibility, and I've seen this. I worked in the schools for many years, and I worked in all of the various special education classes. And even back then, there was an awful lot of underestimating what the kids were capable of.
Yes.
You know, we just want to make sure they succeed no matter what, so we'll lower our expectations so low that he can get a sticker for breathing. And I think that shortchanges the kids. It's sad. Okay.
Yes. Okay.
So those are things to consider without me telling you, okay, Maria, here you go. Here's the best one, because I can't know that.
No, I'm glad. That's what I need, some general thought. So that's good. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you for calling, dear.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. We'll get to your calls here momentarily. But as I messed up yesterday, and I'm trying diligently, assiduously not to mess up today, I got a break coming up here, a hard break. Well, all my breaks are hard because it's hard for me to leave you for 2 minutes. So I guess you could call it a hard break. Heartbreak? I have a heartbreak coming up here in about 40, not even 40 seconds, 30 seconds. Where the music plays, and there's no way No way. I'm going to be shut down by the computer. So when we come back, we will get to your calls, and I ask you to be ever so patient. I'm Dr. Ray. The program Here the Doctor Is In, it's a co-production of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, some 400-plus stations, as well as Ann Arbor, Ave Maria Radio Communications, with Andrew Krucek, producer man, the home of Al Cresta and Teresa Tomeo, and many other programs heard on this EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. So, I was going to say stick with me, but who am I to tell you what to do? I could ask you, if you're willing, would you please stick with me? I commit to you to be back in 2 minutes.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I don't think people should have negative fears of God, but I think you should get a lump in your throat. You should feel excited. Suppose I was going to take you and introduce you to the Pope or to the president of some country or something. You might get a lump in your throat. Forget it. Every day, you, I, live and move and have our being in the presence of God. These are the class of feelings we should have. And we should have them to an intense degree if we really had the sight of Almighty God. These feelings are the feelings which we shall have if we realize His presence. And in proportion as we believe that He is present, we shall have them. And not to have them is not to realize, not to believe that God is present to us.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
There's a simple step to raising a more grateful child. I used to say, easy, eliminate half of their material possessions. I don't say that anymore. That's ridiculous. I say 75%. They don't even miss 50. 22 stuffed animals, you go down to 11. Not exactly a hardship. Simple step to raising a more grateful child. Don't be so free with the material stuff. Research has shown more generous people, by and large, have less. You give a child less, he's more willing to share it. He also is more able to occupy himself with things like boxes and dirt balls and rocks, worms, stuff that doesn't cost a whole lot of anything.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of. Like it. Oh, 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 that's some bluesy stuff that I think we're going to be playing at the Ave Maria 25th Anniversary Gala Picnic and Elts Bash. Yeah, they're going to bring in an organ for me and going to be doing some singing and carrying on. And carrying on Okian. Okay, real quick. We will go to your calls here momentarily. One, two, that's momentarily. Kevin, North Carolina. Have some guiding thoughts for Maria, who is asking about school options for her 13-year-old diagnosed autistic son. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you? I'm a longtime listener, a couple of years. I never had a chance to actually call you. I've written you, emailed you, but I heard the story of the lady with the autistic child, and I've got some recommendations. There's a school in North Carolina, Catholic school. It's called a St. Gerard House. It's just for autistic children, and it's a very small school. The education is one-on-one with experts in autism. They call it applied behavior.
ABA.
Word, but
ABA, applied ABA, behavior exactly. Analysis.
That's the word. Yeah. But they have like 40 of these people, and they take all kinds of children with different different parts of the spectrum, you know, very severe to not too bad at all. And what's amazing is they can actually, if they have the child young enough, they can spend a couple of years with the child, maybe one or two. The child has learned socialization skills, comes around, and the child can mainstream into regular school. As a matter of fact, I know children who are now in college who went through this particular program. It's a very, very good school, one of the best in the country. There were ties to the church at one time, now they're on their own, but they're still Catholic, run by a great Catholic lady. And I can't say enough about it. I'm not an expert in autism by any means, but I do know results, and results count. And I'll tell you, these children, you have children that come in the school that don't even talk.
Well, Kevin, let me jump in. Let me jump in here for a second, because that's a good plug for that. She lives in Ohio, and this school, I'm sure, costs. And I'm not sure she wants something for her son that is a boarding type situation. She didn't mention that. She didn't raise that. Now, your thoughts are real helpful for anybody who's looking for some kind of in-house program. Sounds good. However, I can't endorse anything if I don't know it or have some research evidence about it, but it does sound good, and I appreciate you bringing in that as an option. And who knows, maybe Marie is saying, I'll throw that in the hopper too. Kevin, thank you so very much. Aaron, Pennsylvania. Aaron is right now struggling, and the doctors do not know what is going on. Hi, Aaron.
Hello, doctor.
What do you think's happening here?
Well, here's the deal. I'm a two-time cancer survivor, once of pancreatic cancer for 12 years, and some other cancer, and they honestly haven't no idea what's going on with me for 4 or 5 months now. I'm just getting weaker and weaker, and I just feel, you know, it's going downhill, and I'm getting moved from doctor to doctor while they're still all the doctors are still working on it, but they don't have any idea what's going on with me.
What are they telling you they're speculating? Have they got any speculation?
They have no speculations right now. So right now I'm off to the neurologist. That's in a couple of weeks. That's the next step. But honestly, they've been running all kinds of blood work and all kinds of stuff. And we do know that I have a gene mutation. They want to take out the rest of my thyroid, which had cancer, but they can't do it because I keep getting weaker. No one wants, you know, we all want to wait to find out why I am getting weaker.
What's this doing to your mood, your peace, your spiritual life?
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, I'm just so tired, and my spiritual life is tired, and the Lord's good to me. He's so good, very good to me, and I know that. But it's just, it's hard. And
Aaron,
yeah, just struggling.
Let's not, the one thing I might be able to offer you here, let's not beat yourself up over the fact that it is harder to, as you might put it, connect with God because you're fatigued. You know, I don't have the energy, the zest, so therefore I feel like I'm drifting from God.
Yeah.
Is that happening?
Yeah.
Well, first thing is you don't punish yourself for that, because your connection with God is not predicated upon your energy level. It has nothing to do with it. You can pray 3-sentence prayers throughout your day. Dear Lord, I'm sorry for my sins. Thank you for being there. Give me the strength to get through this. Little prayers. Doesn't take much, a whole lot of energy. You don't have to sit and try to focus for 27 minutes on a prayer period. Or even if you're reading the Bible, you don't have to say, well, I'm going to read the Gospel of John. No, just read several verses. I think what you're telling yourself is it's bad enough that we don't know what's going on with me, and I'm just getting progressively more fatigued. But now I'm feeling like I don't have enough energy for God. Well, that's not true. That's not true at all. God doesn't require energy. He just requires your heart. That's all. And you could say a prayer as simple as, Lord, I'm pooped. I'm whooped. And you know it. So I'm just going to be praying to you a little bits at a time as I can. And I got a feeling the Lord's going to go, Aaron, it's perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. It's bad enough that you're unsure of what's going on. You don't have to be unsure if your connection with God is going to be threatening now, which I think you're wrestling with. You're thinking to yourself, if I get any more tired, I won't even be able to look at the sky to think about God. That's not true. You know that. So let's take that one off your plate. Can you do that?
I can do that.
All right, my friend. You don't need to worry about God's faithfulness because he's there all the time. And he knows that where your heart is. And if you say, dear Lord, I'm just tired. And it's hard for me to focus. It's hard for me to get to Mass. It's hard for me to pray a rosary. And after three Hail Marys, I'm about done. Okay. Then give it what you got. And the Lord knows that. I'm not going to punish you for that.
Amen.
Amen. Yeah, see, you said that, and you didn't lose your breath saying amen. That's a pretty short prayer. Of course, I know now you have to say a women, right? But
or a they.
A they. I'm glad you can still laugh, my friend. That shows you got your heart's still ticking. Aaron, God bless you.
Yeah, it sure is.
Take good care, my friend. And there's people that listen to this program because they told me that when somebody like Aaron calls in and is definitely feeling exhausted about a lot of things. Now, I didn't mention this, and I'm sure it's been brought up, and I'll talk about it in the future on a look-back call. Somebody might be talking about depression. So, all righty. Let's see. Let's go to, you're right, Andrew. Go to a break. Thank you. You reminded me because I just glanced at the clock when you said that. Thanks for keeping me on track. I'm Dr. Ray.
I'll send you my consultation fee.
Don't let everyone else get all the great advice. Call now to speak with Dr. Ray.
The Encounter Online Virtual Conference is December 27th through the 29th. 15 powerful speakers, prophecy, healing, and impartation. Do you want more?
The truth is, brothers and sisters, there is no solution to the cultural and church crisis but Jesus Christ the Lord, alive in a church that's empowered by the Holy Spirit. Period. That's it. He's finding out right now who's with me, who wants to live in the Spirit of God, who wants to follow me. That's what he's doing. It's going to be a work of God for the glory of the Father glorifying the Son in the power of the Holy Spirit through a people who are alive to him and are proclaiming him with everything they've got.
Register today at EncounterConference.org. That's EncounterConference.org.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. Maybe you've even prayed the prayer of spiritual communion. Spiritual communion is a concept that goes all the way back to the 4th century. It flourished in the Eastern Church and gradually moved west. Spiritual communion stresses the transcendence of God, where we unite our desires, intentions, and loves with the holy sacrifice of the Mass and the consecration of the Eucharist at the altar. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Thank you.
Well, you people come out of the woodwork when it's time to help folks. I noticed that. Elizabeth definitely wants to say something to Aaron. I'm hoping Aaron's still listening. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Yes, ma'am.
How are you?
Nothing gaining on me that I know of.
I just want to thank Aaron, the caller, and your comment on you know, what's going on with him, because I'm sure a lot of people but myself have been in the same boat, going through having rare health conditions that just seem to sap our brain energy and our attention span to almost zip. And you're worrying about, you know, am I giving enough to God? Am I giving, you know, as much as I should be to him, and kind of beating yourself up, saying I'm never going to get there. So it was a relief to hear that, but also to know that other people are going through that and how to respond to that.
And how did you do it, Elizabeth, when you were going through it and you were beating yourself up? Because with my own physical struggles, you weren't figuring you were giving God enough attention.
Well, it's something I'm still working on. It's a health condition I'm still dealing a lot with. And some days I just tell myself, this is all I can do. And I have to keep telling myself that God's not disappointed. Like, well, you're just not reaching the bar. Too bad. And I have to tell myself that's not the way he looks at me. And some days it's not that easy.
I'm glad you corrected your thinking, because initially your thought was, okay, I'm letting God down. Okay. He's up there crying. And then you realize that's foolish thinking. That indeed, you know, you're giving to our Lord within your fatigue factor, and your heart is in the right place. So that you corrected your thinking, and when you corrected your thinking, you didn't put yourself down as much, and realistically, you realized, yes, I am not my physical, zestful self, and doing the things of devotion are a little harder for me, and maybe that makes them even more virtuous. Did you ever think about that, girl?
Once in a while, I have to put little reminders everywhere. Yeah,
you don't have to call here to make me correct you, you know. You can do the heck of a job of correcting yourself.
I sure can.
That a girl. Thank you for the call, Elizabeth. Beautiful.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Ray.
Let's take one more, because Aaron was a touching call. Kathy from Columbus. She's got a speculation here. Go ahead, Kathy. What's your speculation?
I was wondering if the caller before this lady, who has had cancer twice and is really, really run down, if he got the COVID vaccine, or if he's been around close contact with someone who did, that maybe it is from that he's feeling so bad. Because,
well,
I do know people. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What you say is possible, except he had extensive blood work. And they checked his counts, I'm assuming. That's just the natural part of blood work. I would assume also they've probably routinely given him a COVID test. That's a possibility.
But, you know, they don't know long-term a lot of stuff about this and what it can cause. So, you know, maybe if he's listening, you know, he could ask a doctor if he had the vaccine, could it be from that?
And if he did, and mm-hmm. we say, could it be, what would be the remedy?
I don't know. That would be up to a doctor. I don't know.
I mean, my question would be, there's probably not a remedy. To tie in his fatigue to, say, a vaccine that he got in March would be really, really kind of looking into a cloud. It's hard to know. I wouldn't rule it out. Obviously, anything can cause anything in the medical world. But the question is, what then would you do about it? The other thing about the COVID, the cancer effects, is he said he survived pancreatic. I mean, 5% of people survive pancreatic cancer.
Right. And I know. 12, I heard that.
that's 12 years ago. So I'm gonna assume, at least at this point, they've checked him for all kinds of cancer possibilities, giving him whole body scans and everything like that. I would think that probably a doctor along the way has brought up depression. I'm almost sure of that, and I don't know if that's it, but that would be raised. And for those of you who didn't get on, please forgive me. Please call back. You will be first up. I'm Dr. Ray, and I thank you so much for joining me. Walk with God. Even if you're tired, he'll carry you. He will, you know.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.